Are you ready for Super Idols RPG?
Super Idols.
A rotating cast of today's hottest up-and-coming tabletop players in one all-new power-packed podcast.
Super Idols.
Move into a new dimension with the year's biggest pop music-themed, magical girl-inspired masks campaign.
Super Idols.
Now you can have all your favorite nerdy roleplay in a funny, sincere, diverse, character-driven package.
Super Idols.
Meet soon-to-be chart-topping idols like Violence Violet, Bane Raven, Symphoria, Elementum, Queen Bee, Warcry, and Karen.
Karen.
Super Idols RPG, the internet's premier narrative play podcast about super-powered teen idols. Call the number on your screen now to order Super Idols RPG on CD or cassette, or stream it wherever podcasts are sold. Must be 13 years or older to listen, because we do sometimes say please do not actually try to order a CD or cassette from us. That's just part of the parody. Please send a self-addressed stamped envelope to yourself, because you deserve something nice in the mail today. And seriously, come listen to Super Idols RPG. It's pretty cool, and it's a fun show, and we think you'll like it. Visit superidolsrpg.castos.com for more details.
Hey, it's Dennis, editor and GM of Control Group. Let's give it up for our ads. And let's throw in one of our own. And I know what you must be thinking. Dennis, I'm already listening to the episode, aren't I doing enough? And truly you are, but if you wanted to go the extra step, why not follow us on Twitter, at @CTRLGroupPod. There we post a lot of information, character portraits, and little promos to the episode, so you can get a cute little sneak peek to get you excited before you listen. You can also go ahead and jump on to the Be Gay Roll Dice Discord server. There we have our own little special place where you can come and talk to us about episodes and episode ideas and systems. Do you have a system you want us to test? Go over to our Patreon. We have a special $5 dev tier where once you pledge to that, we'll go ahead, take a look at your system, give you a nice little preview, and then somewhere down the line, we're gonna go ahead and give your system a try. And if you don't have a system to test, you can also join our Patreon for as low as a dollar. There, you can go ahead and get access to special tests that we put behind a paywall, because they're probably too stupid to go on the main feed. Also, it's tried and true, but smash that like and subscribe button below. If you're on Apple Podcasts, give us a review. If you're on Spotify, give us 5 stars, or however many you think is appropriate. Anyway, if you have the spoons to do this, go ahead. We really appreciate the support. We want to thank you nevertheless just for listening to our podcast. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
To your butts, variables. Welcome to Escape from Dino Island. This is another one shot out of One Shot of Palooza 3, Three Shot of Palooza. Once again, all of these games we're playing for Three Shot of Palooza come from the Abortion Fund, support being pro-choice. I am Dennis Veray. I am your DM or Dino Master for this game. And with me, around the table, I've got some players. And their dino handlers.
Hello, I'm Ryan Bowman. I'll be playing Niles Farisian.
I'm Tony Machete, and I'll be playing Chesterfield Wyndham Thorpe.
Hello, I'm Kay Cloud. I'll be playing Enid.
Escape from Dino Island is another 2D6 system working off the Apocalypse World hack. Original, it's pretty by-the-books basics, but it is a really decent hack, and I think it's got all of the original stuff you're used to, the 2d6, some playbooks, basic moves, special moves, a lot of dinosaurs. So I think we're actually going to get into the thick of it. We see our three characters standing in what looks like a very high-tech, corporate-focused room. You can get the sense that in this room, a lot of focus tests have taken place. Trying to find the best way to move their product. You stand
before a giant screen, and I want you guys to just go down the line, describe your character, and let me know which playbook you chose.
Okay, I'll go first. So, Enid is our kid. I'm playing with the kid playbook. Enid is, like, really small, like, very compact, like, 3 feet tall, just a very aerodynamic child. You know, nobody knows how they got there. They're just, like, a muddy, scrappy little child roaming about the island. They seem to have some sort of very complex relationship with the dinosaurs that nobody can really figure out. You know, that's pretty much all everybody knows about Enid.
Next to Enid, not sitting, but standing at attention, dressed all in, like, if you remember, like, the bad guy from Jumanji, he had, like, a tan, like, that tan outfit, like, that like, old-timey hunters wear, and he has slung across his back a large, state-of-the-art tranquilizer dart rifle, and hanging by his side is a tulwar, an Indian sword, because colonization. You see an older-looking man in his late 50s, bushy mustache, bifocals, like circular bifocals. This is Chesterfield Wyndham Thorpe, of course, Senator Thorpe's family, the Thorpe dynasty, the conservative dynasty that has been laying claim to political offices across America. You might have recognized him from his failed campaign for governor of Missouri. He is the first of his family to not claim political office. He does not want it to be brought up, so.
You see, kind of, let's say skittish, standing skittishly, you see Dr. Niles Frazier, who is kind of hunched from all of the years in graduate and doctoral school over their desk and research, kind of hunched shoulders, also wearing kind of a tan outfit. Do we know the climate we're going to be engaging with?
We are dealing with a... Now I got a roll from the table. Oh, early. Sorry. Thanks, Ryan. No, you're good. It is a... typically, it should be a tropical climate, but ever since you guys have been there, and I'll reveal the reason in a bit, there's been a torrential downpour. It is wet out there.
Alright, Niles has a pair of perfectly circular spectacles and a mop of very light blonde hair, and is wearing a tank top and a raincoat, a yellow raincoat.
You all watch as the screen in front of you begins to display. As the video starts, it kind of starts off like an old school film video, so there's like the footage, the film like whirring itself up, even though it's a fully digitally filmed thing. On it, you see this kind of heather blue background and a stylized, like, when a corporation has, like, a really cool iconography, and then they just keep on going so corporate that it, like, takes all the fun and soul out of it, you just see the initials JP in the bottom right corner. Through a door on one of the sides of this research rooms, it kind of, like, blasts open. You immediately see, like, a fog roll in. And then I would say that none of you can identify the smell of this fog based off your character descriptions, but you just get the faint, you know, stench of a skunk. And you first see kind of bright neon-esque lights coming through this darkened hallway that leads out of the door. And then you hear almost to a violent level of sound, a Waka Flocka song playing as a gentleman rolls in on a hoverboard. He's got a little Beats pill in his hand and what seems to be a drink in the other. He's Caucasian, you could say about mid-20s. He's got a middle part of his kind of strawberry blonde hair. He's got sunglasses on and a puka shell necklace that he's wearing with his kind of open collared shirt. And it's a white shirt, and he's also got white pants on with a fine Gucci belt supporting his waist. As he comes in, the Waka Flocka song is assaulting you at this point as he's doing donuts around the three of you. And then eventually settles right in front of the movie screen. On the movie screen, you see as almost the same sight happens as there is a filmed version of the gentleman who comes off screen to a different Waka Flocka song. Seems like he did not remember correctly which Waka Flocka song it was, but he comes in on a hoverboard on the other side as Screen Man looks down to Real Man. And Screen Man goes yo, what up, Live JJ? And Live JJ looks up and he's like, yo, what up, Screen JJ? And both JJs turn to look at you as Live JJ goes yo, what the fuck is up, party people? My name is JJ Hammond, or, since this is kind of a business expenditure, you can call me John Hammond the Third, bitch. You are on the cutting floor of what can be a life-changing investment. You are all three brought here today to kind of help me out. This business we're at right now was kind of my grandfather's shit, and I just tried to turn into a cool killer little pop-up. You know how shit happens with Fire Festival and people go and it's kind of trash? Well, I wanted to do the opposite of that because my grandpa did that 30 years ago. So, I'm here to relaunch, and then he points up at the screen, and the screen, there's a long delay, he did not pad for enough time, but eventually Screen Jay goes, and he kind of pulls up the iconography from the right-hand corner of the screen to pull up the letters and spread them apart, to which it shows Jurassic Park! That's right, we're reviving Jurassic Park. Your grandson's favorite fucking holiday spot. We got dinosaurs out the ass. And I know, you're wondering, how the fuck did we get dinosaurs? As Screen JJ's let me see your finger, Live JJ. And Live JJ's all right. And he kind of points his finger up to the screen. Screen JJ has a little pin in his hand and he goes and pricks Live JJ's finger. Live JJ poorly acts the pricking of the finger. It's a missed spot. He's off his mark, but they still play into it. And then out of the spot that should have been pricked, an animated DNA helix pops up. But since we're in modern day, it's not a 2D animation. It's a horrible 3D rendering animation of the DNA sequence as it goes over the classic DNA scene from Jurassic Park. But as this is happening, this gives the three of you a little bit of talking time as Live JJ seems to be fully engrossed with the animation sequence of how they brought back dinosaurs. The same thing as the first film. There were mosquitoes and fossilized amber. They were able to fix the genome with the blood there.
This is the most uncomfortable that Chesterfield has ever been in his entire life. This guy's Chester's very, very old money, and this is so new money. He knows that, around other rich people, he's supposed to, show respect and stuff, but he fucking hates this guy with every fiber of being. This guy, this is everything that he abhors, but he also, has to be nice to rich people because he's a class warrior above anything, and so he is truly feeling the fight of two wolves inside him right now, and he is trying to his face is very rigid and poised while just beads of sweat drip down the side of his face as he watches all this.
Do I notice that sweat? Should
go ahead and Ryan, you're gonna make the first roll of this. Go ahead and 2d6. You get to choose when creating a character. You get +2, +1, -1. where you want those to go for fit, clever, and steady. And I don't think this applies to, like, a standard roll, so I'm just gonna have you roll plus clever.
Alright. Well, that's gone. I got 10.
Yeah, then I'd say you can easily notice the sweat.
From my back pocket, I pull out a handkerchief, and I make my way over to this man, I assume very burly looking man, and I kind of hand it out, and I'm like, "Hi, I'm Dr. Niles Frazier," and I think I kind of like do a little bit of a trip, and like my back flips in front of him, and then I slowly like push the hair out of my face, and I try to hand the handkerchief, and I'm like, "It's nice to meet you."
Chesha looks down at it and looks up at Niles, and so it's a duel then.
No, I meant, like, I didn't mean to drop the handkerchief. I meant to just hand it out.
Of course, thank you, my good friend. I respectfully decline. And give him, like, a very stiff forward bow and step back and avert my eyes so that I'm not making eye contact with this man in front of me anymore.
I think I kind of scramble to pick up the handkerchief and, like, just take a couple steps back.
Watch as the ending of the video comes to a close. You can see now that JJ is now in like a squatting position on his hoverboard, and he's fully been intent on watching that, as if he hasn't watched it a billion times from the marketing department. He turns around to all of you. So that's like the general like floor pitch of it. The thing is, like, I brought all three of you here for a specific reason, to help me out with Jurassic Park. And I just thought we'd do like a general chill kind of like tour of Isla Nublar, see how you guys have a fit for it. Cause like, we need like a dino doctor, and he points to Frazier. And like, we need like a head of security, as he points to Chester. And fucking Enid's always been here. And he goes up to Enid, and he goes to like... He goes to dap her up. How's that go?
Enid immediately lets out the most ear-piercing screech you've ever heard in your life and goes to bite JJ's hand.
You fully, like, you're able to connect teeth-to-skin contact on JJ, and as you're just, like, lashed on to, like, the webbing in between his thumb and his pointer finger, he's just like, dude, they've been here since, like, I got to Isla Nublar. They just, like, been around on the island. And this is just, like, how we deal with each other. But it's kind of fly as he, like, tries to shake you off of his hand.
Chester kind of puts, like, one hand on his tranquilizer rifle and gives, like, JJ a look like, you want me to shoot this kid or...
kind of, like, unlatch my mouth, my teeth, and like wipe the blood. I'm like, they don't like you, and they're gonna get you if they get a chance. And then I latch back on.
Yeah, this is how we play.
That's what my mother always said about the help.
JJ just like lifts Enid up while she's still gnawing on his hand to like carry her around. So anyway, I thought we'd go on the tour. As you guys head to the opposite side of the room, the door kind of slides open, and instead of a hallway, there seems to just be a steep drop. You, from your angle, watch as JJ kind of precariously holds Enid over the steep drop, and just kind of like bops her on the head a couple times, releasing her grip. And, like, from Chester and Niles' perspective, like, Enid just drops out of existence, out of frame, to another probably ear-piercing screech on the way down.
Yeah, I mean, I do, the whole time that you're doing this, I'm going like this. and the scream too. Yeah.
And then, eventually, JJ looks at you. He does a gesture at the both of you that is just, like, not of your generation. You can't tell if it's, like, a TikTok thing. It's just, like, he makes a sign to you with his hands. And then he also jumps through the doorway and then down
and out of existence.
I look to Chesterfield in awe.
I look at Niles and then, very well then, go on.
You want? You think that I should go first?
I will wait here just in case they return.
All right. I walk to the edge and kind of look down. Do I see anything down there?
Yeah, you see kind of at the bottom of the door frame. It is very steep at the beginning, but it does taper off at an angle. And the floor looks slick and yellow. And as you get closer to the door, what you thought was just kind of the hum of the fluorescent of the building, you realize is running water.
Ooh.
As you just kind of notice it as like a water slide down.
All right. I put away my notebook because, of course, I was taking notes. And then I kind of straighten myself and then I jump in.
In your raincoat already on the water slide. All right. After I see this investigation, I guess Chester will wander up to the side and, like, very stiffly and slowly with, like, his, like, starchy khaki pants, like, kind of bend down and, like, kind of scoot over to it. And, like, it's tied with his rifle on his back and a dart probably, like, fires off into a light accidentally when he's, like, trying to lay down and just kind of scoots his way on at, like, an angle.
Yeah, you're able, both of you, eventually, it's like that one scene in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory when they're going through the tunnel, where it's just like suddenly an acid trip. There's like too many lights. Everything is a little too scary for a little bit. But then eventually you kind of drop down into like a little wading pool at the bottom, and you realize that you're in a fixture on the ground floor of this headquarters that you had noticed on your way in. It just seemed like kind of a fancy office building kind of water fixture, but it's the landing pool for this exit. As you kind of come up, you're given complimentary towels. You see there is a little bit of a hustle and bustle around this headquarters that is like completely staffed with employees going hither and to as you're in the base of Hammond Industries. A kind of safety headquarters in Isla Nublar. JJ, as you're kind of drying off, just like, I just think water slides are fun, dude. And he is eventually met with another person who is in kind of the general uniform of Hammond Industries. It's all this kind of like stark, I'd say it's like slate gray uniform with like blue pinstripes throughout it. And you see this woman, she has, like, very vibrant red hair. She has a clipboard in her hand. And she introduces herself to all of you as Issa, Dr. Issa Fem.
Chester tries to straighten himself up as much as possible now that there is a lady present. Tries to cover up the small gash on his thigh from his sword banging against him on the water slide that he's had to fucking bring. Just extends out a hand, like, does a little another stiff bounce. Is like, Doctor Lady, very nice and charming to meet you. New world as it is.
Quite. She's very dismissive of you. I'll be joining you all. I am the head of the kind of logistics department here on Isla Nublar. I'm sure JJ has told you all of the information you need to know. And she kind of looks at JJ. And once their eyes meet, JJ immediately like turns his head the other direction. And, like, quickly gets on his phone. And she kind of, like, nods solemnly and back at you. Ah, I see. So, I'm sure JJ has told you that this is going to be a tour of Isla Nublar before Jurassic Park fully opens. Correct?
Niles nods.
Well, he might have failed to mention that he had posted on his Instagram about an early access event that is also taking place today. That's why you see kind of the scramble and pandemonium here at Hammond Industries, as a lot of us are kind of gearing up for a lot of people coming to Isla Nublar that we were not expecting. As JJ's like laughing at a TikTok on his phone, Issa kind of fixes a little coif in her hair and straightens herself back up. So we would like just if you, Dr. Niles Frazier, could have a look at some of our livestock. Chesterfield, if you can just make sure that the area is safe and... Oh! Hello, Enid! And you watch as Issa just kind of, like, bends down in her, like, uniform skirt and down towards Enid.
Enid swallowed a lot of water on the way down, so she just kind of coughs it up all over the nice lady's shoes.
Ah, yes. This is usually how it goes. And so I will also be accompanying you on our tour today. And she looks at her clipboard and quickly at a nice watch on her wrist. And then you see another gentleman run up to your group. He is tall, lanky. He's got this kind of fine, curly hair that's relatively short and unkempt. And he's got these relatively thick glasses. But despite the thick glasses, the gangliness, and the kind of weird haircut, this dude is conventionally attractive. He's also in uniform. His tie, you watch as he, like, quickly readjusts it right before getting to you. Ah, just in time, Issa picks back up. This is one of our newest interns who's coming around to double-check everything. Mr. And you can see that she's going to a list on her clipboard. And right before she can, like, really take an in-depth look at the list, the tall guy just, like, quickly shouts, like, "Oh, it's Quinn! It's Quinn. You don't have to check anything. It's Quinn. You can all just call me Quinn. I'm here because I am a part of the tech department." And you can see as Issa, like, quickly goes back to her board, you can see, like, I'll actually have all of you roll plus clever for me.
6, 9.
I'll say both. Chesterfield, you are just fully enamored with Issa to really discern anything from her visage. Niles, you're better with dinosaurs, even though I don't think you've actually met a real one yet, than you are with people. But you can tell that something's off with Issa. Enid, in your little feral state, you're able to, like, fully tell that the dysfunction of everything that's going on, all the high stress and how everything's going to come back to Issa, that she took, like, a precursory look at that list and, like, it kind of just, none of that information stuck. She did not double check anything about Quinn, but she just played it off like, "Oh yes, I am in charge. I know what I'm doing. Quinn is supposed to be here." As Quinn is, like, he's just, like, finished shaking hands with Chester and Niles. And then he ends up in front of you, Enid.
So, you thought that I was done coughing up water. I'm just gonna cough up a little bit more water. And I look up at him with my glassy little childlike eyes. You know how children just kind of look at you? And I'm gonna look at him, and I'm gonna go, "You've never been here before."
There's, like, a cold sweat that quickly flops over Quinn as Issa actually sticks up for him in that moment. A lot of the staff hasn't had the chance to make their way to Isla Nublar to help with preparations, so a lot of the interns, this is their first day. As you look over to JJ, and he's playing 8-ball on Facebook Messenger with someone. You're not 100% sure who, but eventually this, like, kicks off JJ's cue that, like, "Oh, this is the party, let's go." As he swivels around on his hoverboard, and he's like, "On Z, dudes!" And you guys head through HQ all the way to a back area that has a ton of jeeps to traverse Isla Nublar, a la the classic movie. However, due to the torrential downpour, you guys have to find a covered truck, essentially. There are these, like, viewing trucks that are essentially pickup trucks with the back area. Instead of, like, a full regular covering, it is more of a glass viewing area where you can sit in the back and view, a la, like, a general safari-esque kind of truck. You head in, and as rain is beating senselessly against the glass, you have another moment in the back viewing area where you guys can talk.
I think that Tessa will be a little distracted still. He's never really had a guard kind of duty before. Like, he acts like he's a soldier, but he's obviously never been in the military because he's in a rich family and, like, a political family. And so the fact that, like, whatever money had to change hands to make him be suggested for this job, the fact that someone is telling him, like, head of security, we want you to check out, like, all of our stuff, he's still just imagining all the cool stuff that he's going to get to do. And so he's just very much in his own head as they walk away, and he might not even realize they're gone for a minute.
In the truck, I think I briefly will turn to Dr. Fem, and I'll say, Dr. Fem? I was wondering when the hiring window for positions here opened and closed, because I've been looking all over the jobs in paleontology, and it seems like, you know, I got hired for this, but I didn't get any reach out for hiring people. And so I was just wondering if I missed something.
Go ahead and roll plus clever again.
All right. Well, I only got a 5, so...
As Issa, in her ability to talk business jargon, is able to, like, circumnavigate the conversation where you believe that there was, like, a quick hiring process in which they went to the best in the field in the beginning, and that they're coming to you now for what you can do, if that makes sense to you. Dr. Frazier.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, you need me now, you didn't need me earlier. You know, you got me in. You got me in when you needed me, not when I might have wanted to, you know. I'm not always, you know you're the shit.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say shit. You know what you're doing better than I know. I shouldn't judge. You know, I didn't want to make...
Yes, of course, of course.
It's an honor to be here.
In the small pause of silence afterwards, you can hear faintly Chesterfield staring off into space, making little gun sounds, going, pew, pew, hey, stop, pew. Don't go there.
You can also see next to him, JJ, also doing kind of like little kid looking out of the window of a long road trip bullshit. You can see him, like, with his fingers doing the little running man along the trees as you guys are driving by.
I just want to, like, look toward Enid, but, like, you know when someone's, like, freaking out on the bus, and you're like, I need to know what's happening, because I don't want to get caught in anything, but I really don't want to make eye contact, because that's worse. I think that's how I'm, like, trying to look at Enid.
It's too late. I already caught your energy. you put one iota of energy toward me, and I latched onto it, and I looked at you. Have you ever eaten raw meat before?
Jesus Christ.
One time I had an underdone steak at the Texas Roadhouse. That's a restaurant chain. A restaurant somewhere where they cook food for you and you pay them for the service of cooking the food. And I don't know if you've ever been to a restaurant before. Even.
What's your favorite river on this island to drink out of?
Just a rough, parsing of the map. I think that, I think Dawson's Creek is probably the best one, the ones that I quickly saw. It seems like it has a nice source from the mountain where it's mostly rainwater.
I've already become very bored of you, so I look at Dr. Fem, and I go, Dr. Fem, do you have a Sprite?
Just give me one second. Dr. Fem looks in her purse that she also has on her, and she roots through it through a little bit. She pulls out an albuterol inhaler. She pulls out another filing chart. She pulls out a bag that's just like, it's not mixed nuts as much as it's loose nuts of a different variety. Like, the ratio is not enough to think it is mixed nuts. And then eventually she pulls out, like, a tiny can of lukewarm, like, the small cans of lukewarm Sprite.
I don't say anything to her. I just kind of snatch it out of her hand. And,
What did we work on?
Not snatching.
And what do we say?
Thank you. And then my claws, I use my nails, my nasty thick jungle nails to crush the can of Sprite, and I just kind of, like, do one of those things. I don't know what it's called. What do frat boys call it?
Shotgunning?
Yeah, I shotgun the tiny blue box spray. That's kind of where I'm landing.
Issa will, like, while that is all going on and you're watching that, as Enid is, like, trying to suckle the last bits of lukewarm Sprite out of the can and puncture holes, she'll, like, quietly move over in the viewing area to the rest of you and just be like, originally I thought she got here with the rest of us on time and was just, like, one of the R&D department's kids, but no one's claimed her yet, and I'm truly getting worried about that.
That whole exchange has definitely, like, caught Chester's attention from his little mind, and he's, like, wide-eyed staring at her now, just, like, fascinating. This is very much, like, confirmed in not a great way, probably a lot of stuff that he's thought about, like, muddy little kids and what they act like. And he's like, oh, that's exactly what Mother always said. This is what they do. But he reaches into, like, a little satchel that he has on his side, and he pulls out some, like, beef jerky. It's, like, clearly been, like, made from, like, Wagyu beef, but it's been, like, dehydrated. Like, it's just, like, for the trail, you know? And he just, like, reaches out a little bit as if he's, like, coaxing in, like, a little monkey, like one of those apes that, like, run around the towns and stuff in South Asia. And it's just, like, come here. Come here, little one. Come here. Uncle Chesty has num-nums.
I'm still, like, drinking from the spray. I don't know how there's still liquid in there because it's so small, but I'm doing the little kid, like, both hands through the car. And then I kind of, like, look at you out of breath with my crusty Sprite mouth, and I just kind of, had to be jerky. Just, I don't get your finger this time.
he snatches his hand back really fast. He's like, delightful!
I, like, reach into my bag, like, prepared to pull out my Neosporin spray. In case she actually bites.
And then, Ryan, Niles is gonna hear a little bit of muttering to his right, and now canonically on the right side of you, in the viewing trunk, is Quinn. You hear him mutter something along the lines of, that's the closest that Chesterfield will get to royalty.
So, Niles hears this, but not Chester?
Yeah, Niles is able to hear that, pick up on that one.
I think I look over at Quinn, like, you're saying that to yourself, or you're trying to say that to me?
You see that Quinn has been, he has, like, a folder that's, like, an intern new hire packet folder, and he's been, like, writing relentlessly ever since you've gotten into their truck. And he looks up at you, his, like, glasses kind of draping down his nose, so he picks them up when he goes to look at you. And he goes, I'm sorry, was I talking out loud?
Yeah, you said, I said kind of quietly, you said that was the closest Chesterfield was ever going to get to a royalty.
That was a little joke between me and Chesterfield.
Okay, I guess. You know,
what is that?
Okay, I guess it just went over my head.
What's over your head, sport? I can reach it for you.
it's nothing, Chesterfield. And Quinn, like, comes into you really tight, Niles. And he's like, could you just fucking... Not.
I'm a little intimidated and a little turned on, I'm gonna be honest.
He's very attractive.
Yeah. I'm like, I really didn't mean any. I thought you were talking to me.
It's fine, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. And then you see, like, he goes immediately back into his notebook, and you're watching him with an intensity, Niles, and fucking once again I'm gonna have you roll plus clever.
Damn. 10.
You're able to get a look at what he's scribbling down, and I will say with your expertise, you're, like, able to understand it pretty clearly. He's, like, writing over, like, the filling in packet, like the W-2s, and you can see he's, like, writing shit over the, like, the scripture that's already on it, but you can tell that it's, like, sequencing for DNA. But then you watch as he, like, quickly closes the notebook, and you, like, have a quick fright as you think it's because he can tell that you're, like, peering over his shoulder. But then all three of you are, like, quickly made to notice why he closed the notebook, as there is a sunroof on the in the viewing car, and like JJ has like stuck his head out. As he comes back in, like, soaked, as the rain is, like, pouring down through the hole to the rest of you. You're all screaming and scrambling, trying to get out of the rain. And he's like, we're fucking here! And essentially, he's just, like, trying to invite you all out of this sunroof. That's a large enough, it's a large enough hole that you all feasibly could look out of. As you do, rain still fucking pouring down on all of you. You look along this clearing through the jungle that you have made in an Isla Nublar. But further in this clearing, there is a little gated off section to which you see your first dinosaur, an Amosaurus, which I can only describe as the weirdest fucking little dude. Imagine Littlefoot from The Land Before Time, but can stand bipedally. A long neck, almost Brachiosaurus, that can stand bipedally. He's got little grabby hands and a long tail. As you see kind of like a herd of them walking through this clearing in the rain. So there's a little section on meeting the dinosaur for the first time. Dr. Niles Frazier, go ahead and tell me how it feels seeing a real life living dinosaur.
I think I'm totally shocked. Like, even though we know that this company's done it before because of all of the scandal.
Yeah.
I think it's just, it's shy. You know, they closed Jurassic Park before I was old enough to go. And so I'm freaking out. And I'm also very surprised because it doesn't look like what I expected it to. I'm like, this is incredible. And also, like, we were all so wrong for so long about everything. I think I'm kind of I'm in awe, and I'm looking at everyone else like, are you in awe? You should be.
As you look over your shoulder, you see Chesterfield. And Chesterfield, what's the one uncanny thing about dinosaurs?
I think for this one in particular, Chesterfield's going to be very put off by the fact that it's bipedal. Because for like an old-time like safari-style hunter guy, it's very important to him to like disassociate himself from the things that he's killing because he like has to kill, like, he kills for trophies. And so the fact that it's bipedal makes it too close to him. Like, so he keeps on looking at it and just being like, oh, the strange. It's quite like a man in some ways. It's quite like myself. Interesting.
Then Enid, what's one oddly familiar thing about the dinosaur?
You know, one oddly familiar thing about these guys is that they just got little grabby hands. One could look at Enid grabbing at their little sprite and, maybe see a little bit of a resemblance to nature in a way.
Enid like, knows this Amosaur.
There's almost quite literally a match cut of Enid still somehow getting at this very tiny cat of sprite. We watch as one of the Amosaurs heads over to, like, a very tall tree. And you guys notice this large, cylindrical, metallic object coming out of the tree as it bends at, like, a 45-degree angle. You watch as the Amosaur heads up to it and begins nipping at it like it's one of those upside-down gerbil bottles. As you're kind of, like, taking in the awe of watching, like, a dinosaur drink water out of this, like, man-made contraption. You watch as the Amosaur pulls back a little bit and then blows out smoke. As through the rain, you hear JJ call, yeah, I put fucking vapes in all of the exhibits so all the dinosaurs could fucking vape, dude. As he just rips the nastiest fucking cloud amongst all of you, forcing all of you back in to the viewing trunk. As you head back into the viewing trunk, there is a little bit of an excitement and murmur to all of you player characters.
Yeah, I think that just like, ah. So they really are the whole time just wandering around out there, just thriving, functioning. Did you see that tree? The tree had a little metal bit. Fascinating.
So are these, I kind of ask the room, so are these the same dinosaurs from when the first Jurassic Park came out, or are these new like newly genetically engineered dinosaurs.
Yeah, as there's like a little bit of humdrum, you do notice out of your periphery, Quinn like really shoots up at your question and is also expectantly looking around. As JJ goes to answer you, and for a second you can see Issa go to like halt him, but then there's like a knock at the front of the cabin of the trunk as JJ gets distracted by this sudden noise, and he heads to it, and there's a little partition in between the driver and the trunk area, and he opens it, and you can hear some faint whispering between the two. Issa turns back around to you, Niles, and goes, no, for the... these are completely new dinosaurs we've sequenced. Genetically released.
Very neat.
Like 10 seconds after that exchange, Jezebel's gonna be like, genetically engineered? You can do that? I thought dinosaurs laid eggs!
Issa heads back into her really big purse, takes out the butyl inhaler, another clipboard, the bag of loose nuts, and then eventually pulls out her phone, and she, like, opens up the pop socket and kind of lays it on the seat next to you. And it's once again the Mr. DNA video that you were talking through earlier, just going over, like, how they resurrected dinosaurs.
Yeah, Jezebel will get, like, 30 seconds into it again and just get really uncomfortable with the 3D technology and stuff. I'm just like, didn't used to be like this in moving pictures, and kind of space out and think about security stuff again.
As there is a quick halt, the vehicle breaks abruptly, and as something has gone wrong, I'm going to ask you all a question. Feel free to throw whatever at me at this current moment. But something is up. We'll go with Chesterfield. What is your personal worst case scenario?
In this very moment of what could be wrong?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in general. Yeah.
I mean, Chesterfield's always been in a position of power just by his nature and by the family that he's been raised in. I mean, being a hunter, like the kind of big game hunter that he is, he always makes sure the situation is carefully crafted so that he's never in any real danger. And so I think that really his worst case scenario is actually being put in a position where he is on his own to fend for himself.
And then, Niles, what made you realize you're in serious trouble here?
Can I endow minor character actions?
Yeah, you can even endow some shit with that.
I like immediately looked around and seeing that Issa and JJ both were like, what the fuck? This happened, like, we are not supposed to break here. Like, we drive for a while. That's where I'm like, something happened. Something bad.
Perfect. And then, Enid, who did you instinctively look to and why?
I instinctively looked to the trees. Because I thought that I could maybe see or hear a rustling.
That's God, that was literally what I was gonna get to. As the rain is just kind of like dripping along the like glass paneling on the outside, as you're kind of freaking out, the rest of you do notice Enid, who's just like little kid staring out of the window very intently, as you all come to the same side of the car as her, as you do witness like a mass exodus of all of these birds out of the trees. It's on the same side as the Amosaurus. And you even notice, like, the herds of Amosaurus, like, peak their extremely long necks. They, like, quickly turn at, like, a 45-degree angle towards something in the distance. And you hear the sudden sounds of rumbling. And JJ eventually turns to the rest of you, very grim, very dour. And he goes, bros, I fucked up. I think they're loose. And after he says that, and you feel the kind of chill of fear go down your spine, you hear more rumbling around you and the faint sound of gunshots.
Chester's gonna pull his dart gun off and like kind of put it in his hands, hoping that nobody sees them, tremble a little bit and kind of steel himself and say like, very well, chaps. Well, sure, we're all ready to move on then. Go ahead and continue back to camp. Very good.
You see JJ kind of like nod now that he's been told what to do. And he goes to turn back to the partition. And you notice him like halt a little bit. And then you see him like fully put his head through the partition. And then he comes back paler than usual when he looks back at the rest of you. He's gone. He's gone. The driver's gone.
An excellent jape, my friend. Very ribald. Bring another. Bring another now. Enid, drive the car.
I mean, feasibly, I would say Enid is the only one who could fit into the partition. Otherwise, you would have to exit through the trunk and go all the way around to get into the driver's seat.
I do have a move called, I know this, when nobody else has a crucial skill, you may reveal that you in fact have that skill, because you are a precocious kid. I don't know, this is
perfect. At the behest of like, oh, someone else drive, JJ's like, dude, I never learned how to drive stick, and Dr. East is like, oh, I also do not know how to drive stick, and you kind of look at Quinn, Quinn's like, no, I don't know either.
I think that I'm gonna kind of look around at all the adults who are like 4 feet taller than me, and I'm gonna be like, and I'm just gonna, well, I guess this is a podcast, I shouldn't do any physical reactions. I'm gonna throw my arms up in exasperation.
I was gonna say, if it helps, I'm gonna use the take my hands move, because we're in peril. Yes. So it says that if you help someone else in trouble, you can roll whatever makes the most sense. So, because I'm the one who initiated this anyways, and I can see that she's probably gonna do it, I'm gonna pull another piece of jerky out and, like, kind of put it up near the partition. Like, she, thinking that this is the kind of relationship I have, that I have to train her, and I'm just like, tuck, 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 then, tuck, tuck, and, like, dangle it in front of the partition. Try and, like, help her get motivated to do that and see if that counts as help.
Yeah, it counts.
You know, I think I'm a little insulted, but I'm not gonna say no to the beef jerky, so I'm just gonna let it go. I'm just gonna take that jerky and wriggle my way through.
As you wriggle your way through, you're able to slide through the partition with your small child frame. As you head to the front, you can clearly see there's signs of a struggle here. There is like mud caked along the seats and towards the floorboards of the car. You can also tell that there is 2 bullet holes through the front of the glass, through the front windshield of the car. And then, since you're helping, I'm gonna have Enid just roll for run. So that's gonna be plus fit. So typically, when we roll as a team with our basic moves, it goes to whoever's in the worst possible position, or whoever has the worst stat in that to roll. But since Tony was able to help Enid in this full situation, I'm just going to give it to Enid to roll for the fit.
Do I need to roll for that, though, technically, to see if I succeed in helping her? Or is it just my count?
Does it ask you to roll to help?
It says, when you stop what you're doing to help someone else in trouble, roll plus whatever makes the most sense. And it says, on a hit, they succeed with your help. So I don't know if I'm supposed to make the roll instead. Okay,
then go ahead and roll plus steady as you fear Enid taking off a finger. Okay, perfect. On a 10, the car revs back up. Due to the rain coming down, you guys are not able to see in the back portion of the car, but the rumbling and gunshots are getting closer to all of you before Enid is able to peel off, as you all head to, there is a, you head back into the dense forest. Enid goes immediately off the paved path that is set for the park's tour.
So she's like, what the fuck? This is not...
As you guys are fucking jumbling in the back like a bunch of bouncing beans, as you are off-roading, going off like these wildly terraformed roots of these massive canopied trees. Eventually you head through another, it's a very small clearing, but in the back of it you can see that there is this rundown and old It almost looks as if it's like a hotel or like a motel. It's like two flights, strictly dormitory living out here in this clearing. And as you're heading towards the dormitories, the car kind of sputters a little bit. Once again, Edith is a child, as capable as they are. Not super great at driving. I might offend the kid drivers out there. That's true. yeah. but eventually the car kind of swerves, and as Enid is trying to get the car back in order, I get stuck in the, like, thick mud due to the torrential downpour. As you guys are, like, I'd say 100 yards away from the dormitories.
Chester's definitely gonna, like, wait for someone else to make a move here, I think. And I don't know. I mean, he's gonna... I think instinctively look to Quinn as the lowest status person in the back still. And say, like, well, that seemed to know the area quite well, I'm sure. As a worker here, why don't you lead us to safety?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was very clear to everyone it was my first day on the island. But, Yeah. Let me just head out there. And as he says that, you can hear outside of the canopy back towards the forest you had just driven out of, that rumbling and gunfire had dissipated as you were driving through, but now is once again getting closer to you. Yeah, let me just, I'll head through myself, make sure everything's clear, and then I'll just, like, come back and see if I can find, like, a winch for the car to pull it out of the mud. So just, like, give me a few minutes. And you see, like, quickly packs everything away into his backpack to make sure it's secure, all the notes he's been taking. And, like, right before he leaves, he, like, opens the back hatch. And he, like, takes a nice longing look at Dr. Niles Frazier. I'll be back soon. And he closes the door behind him. You, like, watch him work away his way around the truck. And even Edith, you're looking through the front of the car. The downpour is extreme. And you can see him for about maybe 30 yards out. But after that, just kind of the gust and everything being blown around, he kind of disappears. And then eventually you hear a scream coming from the direction he just went. And then you hear faint gunfire from the direction he just went. And then silence.
I'm gonna search in Dr. Fem's bag for another sprite.
You crawl through the partition as everyone is just like, what the fuck is going on? And it's like, for a moment, everyone is kind of in that shock where they're like, oh, she was able to drive the car. Like, maybe she's onto something again. As you pull out the funeral enabler, you pull through the paperwork, the loose nuts. You reach back into the bag, and you're able to pull out. Actually, it's a tiny 7-Up this time.
Their words.
Yeah. In character.
This tiny little 3-foot child. Fuck! But, you know, yeah. The nails go in. Anyway.
Dr. Frazier, I'm obviously unfamiliar with the situation we find ourselves in. Out of curiosity, you know, as our resident expert here, could a genetically engineered dinosaur use a gun?
He adjusts his glasses. I mean, if it's genetically engineered to hold and operate a gun, I assume it could hold and operate a gun, but that would be a very specific and intentional choice from those genetically engineering it. And I kind of look back to Chesterfield, like, that guy probably just got shot. Are you going to do anything about that? Is the resident muscle?
The beads of sweat are definitely coming back on the brow of Chesterfield. And he's kind of getting this intense look from you. And says that, just curious, this gunfire that we keep hearing seems to be... I'm unsure if it's coming from enemies or allies, you know, and that's always a difficult position to be in. As many foes as I've slain, dinosaur with a gun. New territory. Not just wanted to know what I'm up against here.
You hear a throat being cleared towards the front of the cab as you look at JJ, and he's about to speak. Issa kind of comes in. It's like, JJ, you don't have to do this. As JJ goes like, nah, they should fucking know about this. The dinos aren't genetically designed to be able to bear arms. The dinos are genetically designed to have gun arms.
What the fuck? Holy shit! That was a bit! What? I said that in character, I guess, too.
Yeah.
Issa goes to, like, speak for him. We gave JJ, since he was footing a lot of this project, a lot of creative integrity when it came to our genetic changes. R&D seemed to go a little haywire with all of JJ's requests. And JJ kind of cuts in, and he's like, no, they accepted all of them, all of my ideas. And see Issa kind of like puts one of her hands on her head, or one on her head, realizing what that could also entail. As there is a sudden and loud thud, a crashing against the pane behind all of you that you're kind of sitting on of the truck. And you turn around quickly to see what it was, and do the torrential downpour, and its quick movements. You don't see anything for a second. And there's a quiet, tense moment as, like, the camera will focus on a single line of water that is falling down, trickling down the window pane. A nice allusion to the Dr. Ian Malcolm scene. When he's being very sexy with Laura Dern's character with the water drop and it falling down her
hand. A very nice illusion.
Very nice illusion, thank you. As you are trying to, like, focus on what is there, and then you're jump scared by a raptor, and as you see, instead of two tiny raptor arms, genetically modified dinosaur AK-47s. And as you're drawing that in, out of the kind of haze of the rainstorm, 12 of these motherfuckers kind of pop up, all smack into the car, tipping it upwards, and then eventually on its side as you all kind of crash open. The back hatch immediately falls open from the trunk, and I'm gonna have whoever has the worst fit roll to run for me.
I've got plus one.
I have plus one also. But I'd be like a less fit than just, you know, instinctively less fit than the game hunter, the big game hunter, so I think I'll do it. Whoa, 11! 6 and 4!
Wow! Holy shit.
These Monopoly dice.
Trust you, Ryan, you know, well. Just throw me the fucking Monopoly dice. You know, the park place with them bitches. As Dr. Niles Frazier is quick with the movement. I'll say you grab someone's hand immediately. Who's the first hand you grab to help lead out?
I think I try to get Enid's hand. Just, like, instinctively, like, smallest human. But I think, like, does Enid take my hand? Or does it, like, does she slice, or do they slice me with this? I'm broken up 7 of 10.
Oh, I take your hand, all right.
Okay.
I take it all from the wrist.
You're like, you instinctively throw your hand back, Dr. Niles Frazier, and for a split moment, you're like, oh shit, is Enid gonna take my hand? And then you feel a firm grip around your wrist, to which you look back to Enid staring you dead in your eyes, into your soul. When you turn around to look at them,
I say, hold on, spider monkey. But, like, not like I have feel, not like, like a different context, but like an illusion. And yeah. I say all of that.
As, like, you can hear faintly outside from one of the raptors, like, as if you could outrun me.
of
I know what you are. Say it. Raptor with gun arms.
These are the guns of a king.
Cut to a scene of the raptors with gun arms playing really fast baseball.
A super massive black hole by Muse plays in the background. You set my soul on fire. You fucking all, you all head out of the car. You run through the muddy marshes that have been created by the rainstorm about 100 yards as you are dodging, ducking, dipping, and diving out of the way of raptors with gun arms. Eventually, you're able to all... You head up the kind of janky stairs to the second floor. Think instinctively, Dr. Niles, in your, like, fear, you may be thinking... Like, higher up may save you from the raptors with gun arms. Just like if you climb up a tree to get away from an animal. Even if, like, the tree is their home. Like, you're running away from a bear. You're like, I'm gonna get up a tree. And then you forget, like, bears can climb trees. So the raptors easily master stairs. at first, they're actually a little humorously, like, trepidatious with stairs. This is their first time with that. Reloading a magazine for their gun arms, they figured out. stairs. A little bit of a hurdle at first. But it gives you all enough time. I'm gonna have Enid. I just want you to roll for me. Just a straight 2d6 roll.
7.
A lot of these doors for the dormitories have been barred off with, like, wood planks, and you don't have enough time to really... Take them off. You eventually find one door at the end of the hall that isn't boarded up. However, it is locked. I think Chesterfield goes to go kick down the door before Enid kind of almost comedically slides into frame before Chesterfield can kick. And Enid, you produce what looks like a skeleton key and open the door. And you head in just as the raptors have mastered the stairs that are on the other side of the balcony, and they start rushing over. And you're able to head into the room and quickly barricade it. And that's where we'll end the session for today of Escape from Dino Island. Check us out. I really wanted to explore Dino Island a little bit more and get to the actual core of the game of escaping it. But I really enjoyed these characters, and I think I have a really good plot hook for this one. So this one shot of Palooza during three shot of Palooza is turning into a two shot of Palooza. Sleep tight, variables.
Be gay.
Roll dice.
An LGBTQIA Actual Play Podcast Network.